show.
Blog Talk Radio.
On the 6th of December, you could probably hear me working the technology. Anyway, welcome to the Blog Talk Radio, or the K Thompson Live Show on the Blog Talk Radio. This is Wednesday, the 6th of December. I am Eric Citizen Payne, as known as the Sun, all that stuff. And you are?
Yeah, the mother of Citizen Payne, Kay Thompson. Kay Thompson Show here, everyone, and we have another exciting show. And by the way, happy holidays to everyone. You know, we're right in the midst of this. It's pretty cold outside, Eric, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, boy. I was at the Y today, you know, I'm running track. Did you know that? Yeah? Okay.
Yeah.
Did an hour.
Tell the people.
Yeah, I'm telling everybody. Mm-hmm. You know, running, walking a lot and running. And so we're all together for me, ready for the holidays, okay? God, we have a great guest on this morning, and it's all about training. And his name is, he's called Dr. Speed, and his name is Roosevelt Bo Weaver. He is a sprint specialist, and he is known as a trained track and field scholarship recipient. And he is really Dr. Roosevelt Bo Weaver, and he's a trainer and a scholar. And he's trained so many different students around the country and out of the country. He had an early start down at Tuskegee Institute, you know, in Atlanta. And after high school, he attended a college in South Dakota. I have to ask him about South Dakota. And he was the only black school student, and he faced a lot of discrimination. We're going to be talking to him when he was supposed to be calling in soon. So, and had a lot of different things to talk to him about. You know, he's traveled, and he's a sprint trainer. He is a trained athlete himself and has trained other young athletes, also here, mainly here in New Jersey, and also in different countries, as I was saying, and here in Montclair, New Jersey.
Okay. All right. Also, too, yeah, thanks, Ma. We got other co-hosts going to bring in. What I was going to say was we got all this, the regular stuff that's going on in the news with the Trump show, traveling circus show. I think we talked last week about Flynn pleading guilty and spilling all the beans and stuff, and it's getting hot in there. Also today, Trump naming, changing the, the new capital, making Jerusalem the capital of Israel or whatever. He's just shaking stuff up, and I think it's to get people distracted from what's going on with him. But let's bring our co-host guys in here. I think this is, number are we looking for from, okay, maybe this is Wayne, Mr. Wayne Gilmer right here, 718. I might almost distract Mr. Gilman.
Hey, how you doing? How's everyone? And good to be back.
Yes, sir.
Where have you been?
Yes, sir. How have you been doing? My mom said, where have you been?
Yeah, well, I've been sidelined by the flu. Last week it was real bad, and I'm not 100% yet, but you know, I'm a lot better than I was. I could barely speak last week, and it's going around. I didn't take a flu shot, and there was some controversy about whether you should take one or not because the strain that they're injecting people with to inoculate is not really what a lot of people are suffering from, and I think there's a decline in the amount of medication that they have. So, but this, I don't know what hit me. I just came in one day, could barely speak.
Wow. What in the world is going on with the medicine?
Come again?
I said, you know, what is going on with that medicine then, you know?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I was watching a report on CBS one morning, and they had one of the authorities or researcher who basically pointed out that it's still good to get a flu shot. And the thing with me is that I have to feel 100% better before they could even administer something to me. But they, what she pointed out is that the strain that most Americans would come in contact with this particular season isn't what they're basically, that's the gist of what I got out of the conversation, isn't basically what they're injecting people to inoculate. And they used an example in Australia, I think that's where the strain is from, that they're using to fight, you know, what could be, I don't want to alarm people, but, you know, the deal is that this could spread like wildfire. I mean, because I really try to be meticulous about washing my hands. If I get on the subway, I just want to put a bag over my face, you know, that sort of thing. You know, I don't want to come in contact with anything that would be difficult. And for the life of me, you know, I just can't figure out. It was like right after Thanksgiving. Maybe my resistance was down, but whatever it is, it was airborne. And it was bad a week ago, but thank God for good old Jamaican rum and Coca-Cola and Mucinex. A shout out to Mucinex and all that. So.
Wayne, an emphasis on the Jamaican rum.
Oh, yes, you know. And it's not good to mix that with your regular medication, but I needed that just to knock myself out, you know.
Well,
every once in a while. Go ahead.
Resident historian, Byron Saunders. Brother Saunders, how are you doing this evening?
Well, I'm doing just fine. And Wayne, welcome back.
Thank you, Byron.
We missed you last week, but you know what? That good Jamaican rum, yaman. And if that doesn't work, we got some white lightning for you. That'll work.
I'm fine with that, too. I tell you, you know, I think we have enough white lightning at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue down there in D.C., you know. What goes on today would drive anybody to drink. You know? I'm sorry, if you have any kind of conscience. And I really wanted to participate last week because, Byron, you've been talking about the whole Flynn thing.
Wayne, before you go on, we can always take a very quick trip to Jamaica, man. You know?
I would love to do the show from the shores of Jamaica.
Right.
Seagull Bay, Port-au-Prince.
Yeah. Well, I haven't been there in years, and my roots, if I may say, are in Trinidad. So we have beautiful beaches there too, you know, and we have forget about what we have. The entire Caribbean is beautiful. So it's down south the United States, except for Alabama.
Okay, guys, listen, we have a guest on the line, and I think this is Dr. Speed, as known here in New Jersey and in Montclair, Roosevelt Bull Weaver, who is Dr. Speed. He's a sprint specialist, and he has trained more track and field scholarship recipients. And I'll let him talk. He is an early starter as a runner at Tuskegee Institute in Atlanta. Yeah, Tuskegee. Okay. Are you on, Dr. Bo? Dr. Speed, are you on?
Good evening. How's everybody doing?
All right.
Good.
Actually, I'm from Macon, Georgia, and I attended Turner High School in Atlanta. That's where I began my track experiences, and later to Yankton College in South Dakota and to Senegal, West Africa.
Yes.
I was there for 3 years as the assistant coach for the Olympic team for the first African Olympic Games, which were held in 1963 in Dakar, Senegal.
Anything else? What about Iowa, Nebraska, and South Dakota?
Well, actually, in South Dakota, I was there to play football, actually. And they discovered that I was so small that the coach was very disappointed because he associated Roosevelt Brown, Roosevelt Greer, They all were huge young men playing professional football. And Roosevelt Weaver came weighing about 145 pounds. He wanted to put me on the bus to come back to Georgia.
So you've worked with students. You've worked with students mainly where, though?
Basically, I worked with students in Atlanta, Georgia, and I was helping out as a volunteer track coach at Turner High School in Atlanta. That's the school of Charlene Hanegal. She was one of my classmates at Turner. And I was very interested in track and field as a young boy in Georgia. I could outrun most big boys in my neighborhood. And I really enjoyed the experience. So as I grew older, I began to realize the skills that I had in track and field and tried to cultivate them. And so when I, upon my arrival to Yankton College in South Dakota, it was known for track school. I won the Honey or Dash championship for the tri-state, Nebraska, Iowa, and South Dakota.
Wow. And now you're still teaching and you're still coaching, you know, students other runners.
Well, actually, I retired as a principal. I was a principal for 38 years. I was the first African-American principal in the state of New Hampshire. And during my period there, I taught at Dartmouth College in the sociology department, and I also coach the sprinters as a volunteer. But during my time as a doctorate student at Harvard, I was the assistant sprint coach. So I had a lot of young men who did well. One of them was Jim Johnson, who ran for governor of New Jersey. I trained him when he was a very young fellow. He's one of the top sprinters and long jumpers, and went on to Harvard and did exceptionally well.
Wow.
Dr. Weaver, this is Byron Saunders speaking. We have a couple of mutual friends, one of which from Atlanta, Miss Alexis Scott, who, of course, is the editor of the Atlanta Daily World, but also Lloyd Tyke Riddick. You are a friend.
Yes.
Did you train Lloyd?
Well, Ty and I was always in competition. It's amazing.
Yes.
But for 20 years, we competed against each other. Unfortunately, he never won against me. And, now, who in Atlanta do you know?
Alexis Scott. She's the editor of the Atlanta Daily World. Yes.
Yes, Barbara was a very good friend, and when I returned to Atlanta during the summer, he would always invite me over for a meal, have just a conversation. He was an amazing person.
Yes, he was.
And the family, I was very close to them, still am, and when I go to Atlanta, that's my first stop.
I hear you. Now, Kay and Wayne and Eric, Lloyd Tyke Riddick. He lives in New Jersey. Talk about Hidden Figures, the movie. Lloyd Tyke Riddick was given recognition by the United States Air Force because he was the African-American gentleman who first discovered that Sputnik was a satellite as he was on duty in Germany at that time.
Yes.
And he did. True story.
He did.
Wow, that's remarkable. That's
amazing person. Not only that, but he's quite a vocalist. He sings so well. I go to different places back in the day. And he was singing, and I could not believe the voice he has.
Yeah. Dr. Weaver, this is Eric. I wonder if you could, for those people that are lay people in the track world and things like that, what's the difference or the training? I'm sure, I know there is, between the distance and the sprint guys, you know, and the people are doing. And excuse me, I've always wondered, too, how long have been the events go up through the sprints, you know, because, you know, you always hear about the 880, the 400. Are those type of events considered sprints as well?
Well, actually, they're not. But the 400 meters, I consider it's a sprint, because now, in order to be successful as a 400-meter runner, it's almost a sprint. You have some amazing speed and endurance. Mm. And one of the critical issues in training someone for the 400 is teaching relaxation. It's very important that you are involved that process in your running. The 800 meters, I think in the future it's going to be a sprint, because the conditioning process and the way these young people are training today, you almost have to sprint. The person I saw at the 76 Olympics was a young man from Cuba. And the American runner was supposed to be the best 800-meter runner in the world at that time. And this Cuban ran him down. I'd never seen anyone with the type of technique that this particular runner had. It was amazing.
That's remarkable. So in terms of the training between the distance and sprint guys, can you talk about that a little bit, the what's required?
Well, I'm a sprint. Yes, I'll do my best. I'm a sprint specialist, so I don't do much training of distance runners, but it's a different type of process. They basically, a lot of long distance, interval training, and distance training. Sprint training, I do a lot of short sprints, long sprints, 200, 300s, and oftentimes 400 meters. But for example, a person running 60 meters, 100 meters, a lot of repetitions, 150s, 200s, 300s. And then I work on technique. And one of the most important phases of sprinting is learning proper start technique. How do you come out of the blocks? In the short dashes, it's so critical. Well, you know the technique and learning to relax. I always teach my runners to relax. And when you're running with relaxation, an important part of that process is how you use your arms. For example, at the last 20 yards, if you are fatigued, use those arms and relax. And that's what I teach. And run through the tape. Mm-hmm.
Wayne Gilman here. I just had a quick question. You know, as you mentioned this, I look at a runner like Usain Bolt, who was supposed to be the fastest on the planet. You know, when you're facing competition around the world like that, how does one really go about relaxing? And the principles of sprint, do they apply for runners of his magnitude who've gone long distance as well?
Absolutely. Once you, there was a great track coach in California, Bob Winter. He coached some of the top sprinters in the world. He was a former pilot during the Second World War. And what he learned from his experiences in during the war is that the pilots who learned to relax were more effective than those who tense and nervous. So he brought that back to the track training. Now, for example, if one is running the 100 meters and he's tightened up and you're tight, you lose your rhythm. And once you lose your rhythm, it's over with. So the more control you have and the more relaxed you are, you're going to be more effective as a sprinter.
Interesting.
Where did you find the more, I don't know how to put this, the runners, the best runners come from what part of the country or what part of the world, would you say?
Well, there are different geographical locations. For instance, the Kenyans are extremely
Africa
outstanding distance runners. They run in high altitude. They run in the mountains. West Africa has mostly sprinters. For example, Senegal, Ghana, Ivory Coast, they are different physical makeup. Kenyans are very thin. The Ethiopians, Somalians, they have a different physical build, and they are very effective in their training as far as distance. It's amazing.
Wow. Hmm.
By the way,
to talk to you.
Down south, for example, where I grew up, every black kid thought he was a champion 100-meter dash person. And it was interesting because we had natural speed, and I never really trained that much. I was just fast. And once I arrived on campus, I had to learn to be more distance-orientated and turn 300 meters. And they call it bottom. You got to have that extra effort at the end of the race. So the Southern boys are men. Excellent sprinters. And you look at Florida, Georgia, Alabama, you look at the football team, and you see some of the fastest runners are from those areas. One has to do with climate, and also is psychological. They believe they can do it, and they're going to do it.
What about diet, doctor?
Oh, it's important. Now, for myself, I eat a lot of vegetables and fruits. Not very much meat, I eat a lot of beans. I try to be very consistent with salads, a lot of green stuff, tomatoes, things of that nature. I stay away from the fast food. I never go to fast food places, and I don't go to pizza places. I eat a lot of natural food and soups and so on.
Interesting.
Well, we'll have to talk to you at greater length at another time, because I find out that I have still a lot of questions to talk to you about. Will you come
anytime?
Back again?
Oh, absolutely. And young, the fellows, I'm so impressed with you, and I hope we'll be able to meet in person one day. It's been a pleasure. As we
absolutely
say,
here.
Listen, they're not far.
Oh, that's right. Au revoir.
Au revoir.
Well, all right.
Bye-bye.
Au revoir.
Thanks,
and Merry Christmas.
Okay.
Merry Christmas.
Same
right
to you.
Right.
C'est bon. Okay.
Yes, sir. Wow.
No.
Yeah, that was interesting. Dr. Bo Weaver.
That's right.
Really good thing. If you want
to give out his number, I've got it.
Okay. Is you want to give out his number?
Yeah. Yeah. I know. I think he's still working with a lot of people, you know, here in the high schools, and as a as a trainer, and also as an advisor and a counselor and a consultant, and so you can reach him at 973-441-8649. And that's Bo Weaver, sprint specialist around the world. 973-441-8649. He is absolutely wonderful.
And
thank you, Bo Weaver.
Let's give out his email too. His email his email is also roweave@aol.com. That's roweave, ROOWEAV at AOL.com. All right, thanks to Mr. Dr. Bo Weaver. There's a lot of I was going to say there's a lot of crazy stuff going on in the news, but then that's kind of ironical, isn't it? I wanted I was thinking about watching this thing the other night when they had talking to some voters in Alabama, and there was this old white lady, and she said, "We don't care what Washington tells us what to do." It was one of those nightly specials. We're not going to let them tell us what to do here in Alabama, and it's so crazy now. Because that reminds me of one other time in my life when I was hearing that, and that was in the 60s, right, when they were talking about, we're not going to let Washington and Kennedy tell us what to do in Alabama. And it's just so crazy that there's a section of the country that is you know, where this is this kind of mentality, just to the point. I mean, I can understand supporting someone, standing behind someone no matter what. But you know in your heart, if someone is doing wrong, you know you've heard things around. And to make it okay in your mind that anything is worse, even a potential guy who's, you know, they're calling a potential pedophile, is better than a liberal Democrat. And that is so, that's straight up the language that was being spoken back in the 60s when people were trying, you know, during integration and the civil rights era when I was a kid. That some of these same attitudes, that some of these people in some of those same places had the same attitudes, and they've been mad ever since they lost the Civil War because the rest of the world told them, you cannot own people, and you cannot mess with the little girls, grown men. And they've been mad. They have been mad ever since. It's unbelievable, but it's a sickness. It's just like, it's like history is repeating itself. Shakespeare said, what is past is prologue. And just that very image, we're not going to let them tell us what to do. It's unbelievable.
Sadly.
And now.
Sadly, Eric, mm-hmm. Trump and the GOP are so desperate to hold on to power that they have sold their souls to Satan above the needs of America. And it comes down to that.
Right.
Yeah. And it's not, you know, and I tell you, Byron and Eric, it's not, NK, it's not even so much the whole image of selling their souls, but what does this say about the Republican Party as a whole? Because no one, it seems like no one is speaking up or has the cojones to say something, even, what's his name there in the House Speaker. I mean, I find it unfathomable. People who are well aware of what the consequences of this man's election would mean, and they just seem to go along with the program, and that Trump is the one who basically is saying it's okay because I say it's okay. You know, where is their moral compass? And I'm not saying that we're without sin, the liberals and the Democrats, because they've already succeeded with the expulsion of Conyers, and I guess Al Franken will be next tomorrow, you know. And, yeah, wrong is wrong on both sides. But politically, man, it just says a lot about our social mores as a country. And, you know, this is an interesting time for change, you know.
Where
is it going to stop?
One thing is certain, Wayne.
Yeah,
America cannot be the leader of the free world when its leaders' morals and compass are perverted and broken.
Exactly.
I mean, that's what you're saying. I understand what you're saying completely.
It's that simple. I mean, here's the whole thing to make it seem like somehow morals, somehow what is right is subjective, right? Because they always want to come out with some moral equivalency. Right? You're doing it too. That makes it all right what we're doing with the expediency. But no, because, I mean, in tradition of the Democratic Party holding themselves accountable, finally, right? I never liked how we were heavy-handed on talking about Trump and the locker room talk with the whole Billy Bush tape and talking about, oh, it's locker room talk. That is what some guys engage in locker room talk. I mean, across the board, it's men, women, whatever people do. That is something that's indicative of people. People are going to do regardless of whether they're Democrats or Republicans. So the whole argument that a lot of the Democratic Party is like, well, we never do that, a little bit holier than thou. It's almost approaching how much the Republicans do that holier than thou stuff. But now that we have Frank and Conyers and that is something that's happened to everybody, at least what the Democrats try and do, and now our hands are tied, right, because we try and show that we're the ones that are responsible with these when these issues come up. We're not the ones to brush it under the rug. We're not the ones to for the sake of political expediency, are willing to put party before a country. We're the ones that usually are the responsible ones that say, okay, we've got to take the punishment. We have to punish one of our members that we really could use him, a Democrat in that seat. Yeah, Al Franken, you've got to do that. And lo and behold, Al Franken's got all these other things against him. These other things.
Yeah.
So it's not a Democrat or Republican thing, but at least from a Democratic side, we're willing to be a little bit more responsible. The whole thing that I see coming from that whole school of thought, that whole kind of we hate everybody that doesn't think like us, that doesn't look like us, is that they think they're right, and they refuse to even consider the fact that they might be wrong, to even entertain. The whole thing about a democracy, right, to me, is that we're supposed to be talking to each other to try and argue the issues of the day. So you try to sway the populace through your reasoning. There is no reasoning behind the hatred that these people have. There's nothing that you could stand up in the town square and say, I think that all black people or all Hispanic people, all people of color are beneath me, and there's no reason for me to recognize their rights. That's not something that is democratic, and that's not something that people are trying to survive in the world. It's going to create strife and cause people to be at each other's throats. At least, and my point is, in this diatribe, is at least on our side, we're willing to accept some sort of responsibility for that, and they are not. And that's what they always continue to hide behind.
I hope it pays off, Eric. I hope it pays off. You know, I had a chance, an opportunity 10 years ago to work with Frank, and I got to know him, you know, on a personal as in fellow employees. Not to say that we were all that close, and I had some issues, but politically, I enjoyed where his head was at in terms of the cause. But, you know, liberals are just as, you know, messed up sometimes when you get them behind closed doors about, you know, their whole thought process, the whole mindset. You know, it's like even though that they're championing the right things to say and do and espouse this the mindset that, you know, which would give the impression that there is a certain moral stability there, but many of us are still, you know, as I said before, there's an expulsion going on here. It's like there's just a massive enema that we have to take in order to get to the next phase politically and to be correct. You know,
well, you know what it is, and I want to get you in here too, Bob, but real quick, you know what it is? We're human. People are human.
Right.
And so these things are going to happen. These urges, these things that make people do whatever they do and have no impulse control and do that, that's a human trait. It's not a white and a black and a Democrat. It's a human trait. How you react once you know, that saying, once you know, then you know. Once you know better, you're supposed to do better.
That's
and
right.
That's where we fall on that side. Go ahead,
Byron. You can say one thing. You can say this. The Democrats continue to clean their house while Republicans continue to wallow in self-pity and moral depravity and decay.
And think it's
exactly.
Okay.
We have to clean up the act. It's bad. I mean, our image is bad. That's the part that's disgusting is the image. There are the rest of the world right now with respect to Trump's announcement on Jerusalem today. This is beyond comprehension because at the beginning, we have to recognize in 1948 when the state of Israel was created, the history will show that it was intended to be a safe haven for Jews as capital for Jerusalem, but also to recognize the world, the three most prominent religions in the world, Arabs, Jews, and Christians. That's the representation of Jerusalem, not just the capital of Israel. It is a safe haven and a recognition of those holy places. And we are literally forgetting that.
Yeah, well, not only that, Byron, I mean, you're absolutely right, but the thing that really, you know, bothers me about what the United Nations impact on the creation of Israel was all about, Israel at one time was proposed for Uganda, what is now Uganda today, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, and the deal is they feel that, you know, that area in the Middle East is indigenous to their history and their background and all that, and it's not the case. That's why there's so much conflict, and Trump knows how to stir the pot. You know, he'll mess in the Middle East. He'll go to the Southeast Asian area of the world and stir the pot there. And it's almost like as if it's done deliberately just to overlook a lot of the frailties going on with his administration right now. You know?
Trump believes in the theory of chaos. And he seriously crossed the line of sanity into this abyss where the consequences of his actions has lit a fuse to a potential Armageddon as described in the Bible's revelations. We all know this story. This is not something that's new. That's a 2017-year-old story. And the U.S. Congress would be very wise to stop this insanity immediately, as once the violence starts, there will be no turning back on this outrageous announcement. And every country, including the ones that are our allies, are saying we are really way off base on this. And the timing of it is incredibly wrong, because during Christians' celebrations of Advent, this is our Christmas season, and it's an affront to all three of the world's major religions, who are relatives. There's no anti-Semitism among them. They're tribal relatives, Christians, Muslims, and Jews, who live in Jerusalem in a very delicate reality, and that tipping the scale and the balance of peace in any way to favor one over the other is just pure idiocy. It's poor diplomatic responsibility.
I agree. It's going to be 1985 all over again, and that's the problem with Trump. He does not look back at history. You know, he has an agenda just to get all these things done before the end of the year. I'm a great president. You're right.
To get that back with that history for one second, Byron, I want to throw this notion out. The tribal relatives of these three religions, right? But where do you think during the course of history, it became what it has become? Do you think the element of race has come into it, where the tribal bonds have been broken based on ethnicities and nationalities, so to speak?
Absolutely. And let's face it, the Jews that are there now in predominance, they're European Jews. They're Ashkenazi Jews. They're not even of the original 13 tribes.
Okay? Amen.
That's a reality of history. And that's what we have. That's why the two-state reality, as envisioned as far back as 1948, when it got started over there in Corona, in the Flushing Meadows Park, where the United Nations helped to create the State of Israel, it was created with an understanding that you cannot go in there and displace the Palestinians. So what Trump and Netanyahu have done, Netanyahu is a serious Zionist regime, which is almost as bad as the apartheid regime in South Africa, because
Dove Hyken while you're at it, Byron.
Exactly. So we have the history. That's why it's incredible that we are even considering allowing this president to really step into this quagmire in this manner, because he really doesn't know what he's doing. And when, I said, once that violence starts, and they've already. It's such a powder keg that ultimately, forget about North Korea. Let's talk about the insanity of a Middle East war right now that will engage World War III. Period.
Right.
Unbelievable. You know, I guess the thing that really gets to me, there's a part of me that wants to believe that the world is looking at this man disintegrate. I think that there's enough common knowledge that we're not dealing with someone who is stable. And so, therefore, there may be a certain amount of restraint before action is taken. But today, what he did today would be grounds for another intifada between the Palestinians and the Israelis.
Absolutely. And I can't really believe his National Security Council members, who are trained military advisors who have worked through every one of these presidents with respect, even going far back as Truman, to understand the delicacy of the diplomacy of this region.
Right.
And he's actually going against his national security advisors.
Right.
Okay, now, everybody, I'm so sick and tired of hearing Trump with Trump this and Trump that. I couldn't care less about Trump anymore. We're giving more power to him by continuing to talk about this nut in the House, in the White House, and all the other nuts that endorse him. Okay, now, let's talk about movies. Change the subject. I don't want to hear anything more about Trump on the show tonight, okay? I'm so annoyed.
Okay.
Listen. Ryan Higginson is doing a retake on Mama, I Want to Sing at the Heckscher Theater, okay?
Yeah.
I was with Bob in New York about a little less than a month ago. And she is doing this, and we're going to be hearing about it. And she, that was my problem, my second off-Broadway, you know, role. In I played the role of the narrator, you know, the fill-in person. But you know, it was filled in, filling in a lot, and I had a really good time, and it was a wonderful experience. However, I had been on stage before because I also had the Thomas and Dan Studio in Newark, and we used to have big performances, you know, down at the Symphony Hall in Newark, New Jersey, for a whole lot of years. My sister and I had the Thomas and Dan Studio. Okay, now getting back to Mama, I want to say congratulations to Vi, and we'll be talking to her again soon. Now, what else I want to talk about? The things that, you know, that are happening around there are so old. Mudbound. Have you seen that film?
Yeah, that's Mudbound.
Mudbound with Mary Jane Blige. Okay? She's a singer. Uh-huh. Yeah. She is absolutely fantastic in this role. It's on Netflix. There's so many different things on Netflix. House of Cards is coming back without that nut who, you know, got in the...
Kevin Spacey.
Kevin Spacey.
But I've become a musical. You know who I really like? Tarzan. I've been watching Tarzan. Shaka Zulu. I'm into like about the fourth or fifth episode of Shaka Zulu, and I can't put it down. Okay. Are you kidding? Listen, so it's a lot of big fun out here, you know, with these movies. I'm a movie
buff. Well, Kay.
I admit it.
Kay, I can tell you, I did 6 weeks of Mama, I Want to Sing on the road with Doris Troy. I was on the tech crew.
Oh, really?
On a bus and truck tour, yes. had a great time. Oh, were you on the bus and truck tour? Oh, Kay, I would have remembered you right from the beginning.
Yeah, because I was filling in.
And she's another great talent.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Bye. But anyway, so I'm on the movie buff thing now, you know, and that and the show. I keep very busy. And politics, the world of politics is going to go round and round. You know, I mean, when you've been involved with it for so many years, you know, because, you know, Congressman Donald Payne is in office. So, therefore, and Eric Payne is here, and he goes back and forth to Washington, and he's also an actor. I prefer talking about acting, Eric.
Okay.
You know, I prefer talking about movies. You like movies.
Yeah, all right.
You admit it. Admit it on the air.
Got it. Okay, we're going to talk about the movies. All right.
Gee, you sound so reluctant, Eric.
Well, the thing about Mudbound, which is very interesting, is that it's a produced by Charles D. King's Macro Company. Now, Charles D. King was in equity debt financing, and he decided in 2015 to become involved with the film industry. And this is African American, and he raised $150 million. To produce film and TV projects, for which Mudbound is one of his projects and is doing quite well. The reviews are excellent. As you say, Kay, we need to go see it and support it. But this is the new breed of our young African-American men and women who are creating and working to produce independent films. And, Eric, you and I know how hard that is. And to be able to really to bring this kind of equity and liquidity to the market is allowing our new filmmakers, our young men and women, African Americans, to produce and make quality films. And so it's long overdue, and it's absoluting them. I'm so happy that this is happening for us in the entertainment industry.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, I think there's a guy named Charles King that was an agent. I don't know if that's the same one you're talking about, because I believe the agent
has been around. Yes.
I think the agent has been around a little bit longer than 215. But, yeah, there's a lot of good things. I know from the politics thing, there's definitely going to be some movies about some of these things going on. Certainly, I could see a reality show going on about Roy Moore and his campaign. Roy Moore. I mean, this guy is, just this. It's just ironic to me that the place that they're always talking about values and God and everything, and they do everything that seems so opposite, so anti what really is what God is about. It's just unbelievable what they're doing down there. I just wanted to ask you guys, what do you guys think about getting back to that stuff about Al Franken? I mean, we're talking about entertainment. I guess he's potentially going to go back into entertainment. Since it seems that in light of these new...
I just wonder if these guys have a shelf life after having been exposed, you know? I mean, if all those people accused, not to say that the accusations against him are any easier than the ones against Matt Lauer and all the others, but I just think that they're media dead now. I mean, here's a guy who controlled the most popular morning television show the last 20 years. Charlie Rose, mm-hmm. you know, had a media empire, a legend, you know. Franken, I wouldn't say he was as successful as Lauer and Rose, but I give him credit for having, you know, made the career change that he did and to get to where he needed to go. It's unfortunate mm-hmm. that his voice is going to be lost, and I don't know if there's any way that you could heal from something like that, you know? I'm certain he'll remain active.
Well, that's what I'm talking about. His fall is a little bit different, being that he was an actual elected official, and supposedly, you know, you're held to a higher moral standard, at least certainly while
right.
you're in office. And some of the things that he's alleged to have done, you know, like in the entertainment industry, is always there's always that touchy-feely. That's what I always say, you know. It's always the kind of the touchy-feely and, you know, you get nerdy guys like I was saying earlier, thinking about a nerdy, weird science guy like Al Franken, you know, and they get a chance to be with the girls through writing plays and
yeah.
being movie directors. Oh, you know, that
I understand what you're saying. I mean, he's no Anthony Weiner, you know,
right.
And to me. When you're dealing with that caliber of an individual, you know,
right.
it's hard to draw the line, but, there may be a reason for an exception in Franken's case because his background was entertainment. But having been in entertainment and for what little my exposure has been from being in radio all those years, you know, at one time it was almost like a badge of honor if you were able to get away with some nonsense like that. And that's why, you know, it is just so, you know, refreshing to see this movement come about. And I'm not looking to draw attention to myself here, but I know what it feels like to have been faced with that kind of stupidity. And I think no man, no woman, no one should have to subject themselves or feel that their livelihood is on the line because somebody's undue influence is basically going to determine what your future should be like or not, you know.
Yeah.
Let me just
jump in real quick to correct. I gotta disagree with the point about it almost being a badge of honor in the entertainment industry to get away with something like that. What I was suggesting in saying the entertainment industry is that it's a loose kind of atmosphere, and sometimes people take that loose, relaxed atmosphere in the wrong way. That's what I was suggesting, as opposed to just to be clear.
I understand what you're saying, Eric, and I agree with you. But I mean, what
right.
I am saying, what I've witnessed, and again, I mm-hmm. don't want to even give attribution as to what I've witnessed. you know. But I said it was almost on that level in order to survive. If you were one of the old homeboys and you were able to, you know, sneer somebody into something clandestine, you know, and get away with it, that was it. And then when something came out, there were tremendous sums of money and confidentiality agreements to keep it quiet. You know, I'm glad that all this crap is coming out now. There should be no confidentiality agreements when it comes to being abused.
I'm going to take it one step further, guys, because I'm going to salute, like, Time Magazine Person of the Year, that Me Too movement. I say, America, take notice. This is a game changer of major proportions. And why? Because women are taking charge of cleaning up the mess that men have made for decades and for centuries. The first mess made by men is the complete and total disrespect of womanhood, period. You know, and the revelations of all of the sexual harassment cases, the political, social, economic, educational, and spiritual abuses of women are the issues that are exploding all over the nation and the world, and are just the tip of the iceberg that must be shattered into bits. And I'm happy to see this movement. And as for the achieving a lasting peace in the world, that's never going to happen as long as men continue to use war and confrontation as its means to an end. Peace will only be achieved when we begin to respect women, who are the nurturers and the balance of what nature and God intended for us to be able to work as equal partners in responsible stewardship of planet Earth. And we are in the midst of a revolution. I am happy this is happening.
Byron, I agree. I'm so glad I wrote what you just said a moment ago. I couldn't have said it any better. That was a joke. I'm sorry.
That's okay.
No, honest to God. I feel the same way. I concur with you 1,000%. You know, and
Well, so a statement about the world, and we talked about this before of, you know, women being treated as second class citizens, not only in the United States, but all over the world. United States is progressive in the rights and the attitudes towards the rights of women and stuff like that. I mean, obviously we know how other places in the world are when it comes to those issues. You wanted to say.
Yeah, it's all because of men. All because of men. Do you hear me? Women should and will rule the world. So move over, men.
Well, there's more of you than there are of us, Kay.
It's because of
us.
You're you. You know, because of women. Without us, you wouldn't be.
Hello.
Let's form
a partnership and work this out, okay? Like the great saint Rodney King said, can we all get along?
Poor Rodney.
My God.
Wait a minute. What's going on with that? What's his name? Who shot the lady, you know? What's his name who went to jail for killing his wife? Big story.
Well, it wasn't me. O.J. Simpson, you're talking
about.
OJ.
What's
going on with O.J.?
OJ's out of jail.
Boy,
I've
been there for a while. Get rid of Trump.
It's just the matter of the way things are looking, and you know, watching Kristen Gillibrand and these other female senators on, in terms of the varying degrees that you touched upon, Wayne, they're like enough is enough, you know, and they have to get to the point where they're talking about what type of grope or what degrees of harassment, if that has to become the conversation, the topic, and then you know. They've gone down the wrong path there, and they need to pull it back. But it's encouraging to see at least the Democrats trying to take some responsibility for stuff like that. You know, and like you were talking about, the courage goes to those women for bringing it out, particularly Ashley Judd when she went after Harvey Weinstein, because anybody, you know, in Hollywood knows that that guy was pretty powerful, and you know, she was messing with her career, obviously.
Everybody in New York,
we
also.
You know.
And
anyway,
we don't even hear about Bill Cosby anymore. You know, I mean, it's you know, it's just sad that you know, so much of this is coming out, but you know, I guess the more it comes out, it's the better it is. It's we're cleansing ourselves. You know, there's a purge
right.
taking place here.
Right.
Yes, it is.
And there is. And one of the best purges take place over the last 24 hours was the firing of the New York Giants head coach and the general manager. Because those guys are screwing up the team. I'm glad that that coach is gone. Had the nerve
wow.
to sit, and he's got long gone. So that's a purge that I could live with, that I've been waiting for a long time. I don't know how you guys feel, if you guys are following the football, but very thankful that we got rid of that.
Well,
coach.
Eric, that's good locker room talk. Okay, I like that. We can
play.
Well,
see, and we kept it clean. Kept it clean.
And McAdoo was
in a class by himself, man, you know.
Wait a minute. Listen, you guys. Have you ever heard of the film, what was the name of it? Orfeo Negro. Have you heard of that?
Said it again?
Byron. Orfeo Negro.
What's the name of it? No, I
Black
haven't
Orpheus.
Heard that film. Oh, that, yes, I've seen Black Orpheus. It's wonderful. It's beautiful.
Yes.
Oh my God!
Yes, I know.
Stunning.
That's what. Yes.
One of the
right.
most beautiful women in the world. Yes.
Yes, and the and her name was, I forget her name. Dawn. She was really Dawn, and Jesus. In fact, she played in that, and I met her some years ago. Okay, the person who played the first part of it, and I'll think of her name in a minute. You know, Marpessa Dawn. Marpessa Dawn, because she had come to my house with a friend of mine, Nikki Baker Scott, who used to perform with, you know, Alvin Ailey's company. Byron, you may have heard, you know, about Alvin Ailey's company. I didn't study under Alvin, but I met him because I was studying under Donald McHale, who was, you know, teaching modern dance, and I studied under him in New York at the New Dance Group Studios and at the 92nd Street Y with all that, you know, history of the dance. And Nascimento, whatever happened to the Brazilian?
Wow. I feel so culturally deprived in this conversation here. You know, I'm from the old Bed-Stuy before it was gentrified.
What?
I'm from the old Bed-Stuy before it became gentrified. We didn't get much in terms of
our,
we weren't exposed to the things that you guys were exposed to.
True. Uh-huh. So, you know, they tore down the Slave Theater.
Do you remember Color Purple?
Yeah, I remember
hey.
That.
Yeah, with Whoopi Goldberg. Looks
right.
to me like,
yeah. Yeah.
Looks to me like they're trying to get rid of Whoopi on ABC.
Okay.
Okay.
Oh, no, I don't. I think that show would be lost without her. You know?
Yes,
it would.
It's coming up to the end of the show now, guys. We got to jump off here. It's been great.
Okay.
This Wednesday evening. Thanks, everybody, for listening to the K Thompson Live Show on the Blog Talk Radio Network. We're here every Wednesday, 8 to 9 p.m. live at blogtalkradio.com/K Thompson Live. I want to thank you, Mr. Byron Saunders, our resident historian. Thanks for your contribution, as always.
Well, I do appreciate that, and I'm going to give some angels some wings since it's the holiday season, okay?
All right. Thank you, sir. I'll talk to you soon. Mr. Wayne Gilman, thank you, sir. With your
thank you. It's always a pleasure. Any vitriol out of my mouth tonight, I attribute to Jamaican rum. So
yeah.
We started, that's how we end.
All right. Thanks. Take care. I want to say thanks, everybody, once again, for listening to K Thompson Live Show. I'm the son. Also known as Eric Payne.
And I'm the mother, Kay Thompson Payne. I'm going to go back to watching Planet of the Apes. Thank you. Wednesdays, 8 to 9 p.m., Kay Thompson Live, everyone.